Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I, of course, am Virginia, and with us for this episode is Spencer.
Hi, everyone. Also joining us, we have Daniel.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be on the episode again. And with us this week again is Carrie.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everybody. It's great to have you all here this episode. And Andrew will be with us again next week. He had pressing duties elsewhere. So our topic for tonight is going to be centered on various aspects of Towers of Midnight, one of which is the transformation of our main character, Randall Thor.
Buddha Rand.
Om Mani Padme Hum Rand, or whatever. I don't know. You know. I think Carrie kind of said it best. He sort of turned into a combination of Jesus and Buddha and every other savior type person we can think of. It's almost not really him anymore. I'm stealing Carrie's words out of her mouth. I'm sorry.
I also thought, you know, one of the things that Brandon said early on, and I'm trying to remember now if this is true for the entire book, is that in this book there would be no sort of Rand voice, no Rand perspective. And I'm trying to remember now if this is actually true. But, you know, that really what we'd see is Rand through everyone else's eyes. And, the story begins really with the Apple Blossom episode.
Yeah. Which is really scary in its own way. I mean, really.
And there's so much religious significance and pretension in that moment, right? Sort of bringing things back to life, the end of winter, the beginning of spring, and sort of new birth, right? New birth and also the power to take what was dead and make it whole again.
Well, that was really foreshadowed in, I should have known what the exact chapter is, but in one of the chapter headings, I believe it was, or in the prologue, where there's maybe it was the epilogue, I don't know, my brain is failing me at this moment, but there's a phrase that is in one of the quoted prophecies that the dragon is one with the land and the land is one with the dragon. There could be no health or any good thing, something, something. But it makes it really clear that there's a connection between what was happening beyond the Dark One's touch on the land, and that connection had to do with Rand's basic descent into madness and almost really evil. He even said in this book that the Shadow almost had him, and then he was given a second chance during his epiphany on Dragonmount. And, of course, you know, there we are with our religious references again with Epiphany.
Right.
Clearly, that was his, you know, his transformation.
He just get to the worst place imaginable before he could rise up again. You know, it's like when you hit rock bottom and there's nowhere left to go, that's either it or you have to rise above it. And, you know, and it's kind of, he just had to get to that point and it was one or the other, you know, and thankfully we have what we have, but it's kind of sad for me because he's so different now. And it's almost like, I know that he said in Towers of Midnight when he was explaining it to Min that he is still him, but he is Lutheran. Like he's, you know, he is who he is, but it's just Rand that we knew previously, in my mind, doesn't exist, at least in the same way, you know, and it's kind of sad. It's like, I miss him. I missed him a lot in this book. Even moodiness and all the crazy drama and everything, I still missed him. I felt like I was reading about a new character.
And I guess I would cast us back a little in a little bit of a challenge. You know, many of us were very frustrated with that rant, right? We wanted him to sort of, you know, get off of his moodiness and just make some progress. So it's interesting to me to hear the, I mean, I respect that and actually also recognize that I became a little melancholy for the rant from before. But I also was with, you know, I think the mainstream of readership, which was, you know, enough of this sort of bickering and moodiness and, in a sense, indecisiveness in some ways. It's time to move on and sort of, you know, get to the end here.
Yeah, well, in response to that, you know, a lot of people, the same people, you know, and I was one of them who was really tired of seeing, you know, as Virginia is fond of calling him, emo Rand. You know, we didn't want to see him turn to Luce Theron, which is what he did in this book. We wanted to see him go back to the kind of innocent farm boy that we knew, and that wasn't going to happen. And I think that's mostly what you were missing, Carrie, is even when he was in these deep depths of depression, well, maybe not so much in the end of the Gathering Storm, but, you know, the beginning of Gathering Storm, you know, end of Knife of Dreams, he still had those elements of the innocent farm boy in him,
yeah.
Even if they were slightly less findable, and, you know, they didn't come to the forefront as much.
As but, Randall Thor the Shepherd, you know, he was still recognizable. Is that even
yeah.
changed so much? And I knew that he had to change. I mean, obviously that's going to happen. That had to be done. But at the same time, I still miss it. Like, I still miss the older Rand. He's so different. It's so drastic.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it gets for one of my favorite parts in the book, and I don't have it with me here, otherwise I'd start reading, but, you know, the part where Cad Swain continues, right before they go visit the Borderland rulers, Cad Swain, you know, she has always called him boy, and she's like, and he looks at her, you know, that's really kind of annoying and insulting, really. I'm hundreds of years older than you.
Yeah, you can call me Rand Siddhar now. Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I love that.
That was what?
Nope, wait, no, wait, did she ever actually call him Rand Siddhar? I don't think so.
No.
But she didn't call him boy.
That's right. She did not refer to him as boy.
That's a good thing,
I don't
probably.
I don't know if we'll get to that point. Maybe if Cad Swain does actually call him Rand Siddhar, then that will be a wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I'm not sure how I'd actually take that now that I think about it. But he's right. You know, I mean, if anybody has a right to be called Aes Sedai, it's probably Rand. I mean, he's one who actually has a portion of someone who lived in the Age of Legends who was Aes Sedai as part of him and has the memories of that person. I mean, really, if they're lucky that he just doesn't insult her and say, well, you're all just a bunch of ignorant puppies and children and, you know, none of you should even be calling yourself Aes Sedai.
Well,
really?
That's not the kind of person that's not the kind of person that Luce Theron Telamon ever was.
No.
But yeah, when you think about it, well, what is a person, what is a being except an acclimation of their memory? So when Rand has the entire memories of Luce Theron, is he not indeed Luce Theron at that point? Obviously, he has the memories of Randall Thor too, and so which gets really confusing.
Right. Because,
which is why I think there were the dual personalities. Other people think other things, but I think that's why there were the two personalities in his head. It was because he had memories from both lives, and the mind didn't have any other better way to deal with that.
So given that time is a wheel, this may be completely off kilter, but given that time is a wheel, why can't Rand picture his future life?
Mm.
Or why couldn't Luce Theron? Now, granted, we don't have Luce Theron's story, but why didn't Luce Theron have Rand in him?
Well, I was going to say, what about? There must have been other, if Rand, I mean, I get that technically Rand and Luce Theron are the same person, right? But they have different lives. So why don't they have all these other lives that have already, do you know what I mean? It's not
well,
because it's happened, he says it's happened, and, you know, time before time.
Right, we've gone through the wheel multiple times.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
well,
Bosch
I think
did not have other memories like Matt. Why does he have all these other of the memories of lives crammed in?
Well, Matt's all the other memories, besides the memories that he had before he went to the the memories that Matt had before he went to the Finn, I don't have a good explanation for. Rand, in this case, there's the explanation is the taint, part of the madness that he received as the taint, which we know is there. Nynaeve confirmed that he still has this madness on his mind, but part of that was the bleed through of the memories. I think Semaraut confirmed that in Knife of Dreams, if we choose to believe her, which in this instance I do.
She rarely lied, he said, but, you know.
Yeah, well, in that point in time, the truth would have been more harmful than any lie in that circumstance.
He was mad. I guess I just didn't put it together because I thought that he was mad, but he wasn't because it was real. It was really happening. So, like, he really did have Luthien in his head because he had his memories, and it was kind of, like, bleeding through.
Yeah.
I kind of assumed that it was going to happen anyway. I don't know why, but I guess maybe it is the madness that is the reason that those two lives merged and not any others.
Well, I'm going to fill in something elsewhere here, which doesn't have anything to do with why he doesn't have prior memories to Luthien bleeding through, but it ties in with both Nat's Tashandarai with the inscription on it, thought is the arrow of time, and a quote with them trying really hard to remember exactly who said it, and I apologize to anybody if they know exactly. I'll look it up later, but it seems to me that I read it's either Einstein or possibly Stephen Hawking said that the arrow of time points in both directions. And I'm trying to think, well, that's sort of what's going on with him in a way, except that it doesn't explain why he doesn't have future or past memories. There must be some sort of limitation on it,
well,
that we don't know about.
Well, when you think of, I think the closest example we have in the books to what Rand is going through is Birgit. Because, you know, they're both heroes of the Horn. They both have the extended memory. Well, Birgit, because she has been woven back into the natural world, she's out of Teleron Riad, back in the natural world, she's starting to lose her memories of her past life. Because for some reason or another, in the weavings of the wheel, in the natural world, those memories of a past life don't naturally belong. And so, you know, I think that when Rand dies, whether it's at Tarmogoyon or some other time, eventually he is going to die. It happens. Mm-hmm. When Rand dies and returns to Teleron Onriad as a hero of the Horn, and he has the memories of all his past lives, I'm sure that he will remember the whole cyclic event, and he will remember doing what he just did again, you know, multiple times. Unless, you know, 7 ages past is too long to remember fully.
Well, unless there's, you know, there were, in Teleron Riad, there were, you know, Birgitta always referred when she was in Teleron Riad to the precepts. Now, precepts implies somebody making rules. I don't know who made them, you know, and who enforces them. That always kind of bugs me. But apparently there are some laws in operation here, and maybe one of those is a limiter on how many or how far back or how far forward anybody can remember anything.
Right, but the Birgitta piece I think is really interesting because, you know, in her story, when she's reborn, you're right, she loses those memories of the past lives, but she retains
fully.
She retains them when she comes back to Teleron Riad. But in the dragon's case, there's an interesting connection, right, between and you know this sort of goes back to, in some ways, you know, maybe this is another interpretation of that first voice that Rand hears even as far back as book one.
Yeah.
You know, maybe this is, in a sense, his own voice from a different direction.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
Okay, just had a read your Harry Potter flashback crossover when Harry sees the Patronus and they're doing the time turner things and everything,
yes.
And he sees himself.
Yeah,
you know, he sees his own self lying there in the Patronus. He thinks it's his father. It's like, oh, gosh, that's scary.
you know, or they see themselves where, you know, is that something that's happening there? Is that a bleed through?
I just always assumed that it was, oh my, yeah.
I mean, you know, again, this is an interesting question because time is in fact a wheel in the books, and wheels turn in both directions. Right now, granted, we've had forward motion and not a lot of evidence of any sort of backward motion, but it does beg this question. You know, the other question I would ask, and you know, I had some adjustment to make in the beginning of Towers of Midnight, is, you know, what was your experience of Rand's epiphany and sort of, you know, the in a sense the recreation of Dragonmount at the end of Gathering Storm? And does the Rand of Towers of Midnight flow naturally for you from that epiphany? There was for me a real, in a sense, a bit of a disconnect between that journey, right? We leave Rand on the top of Dragonmount sort of in a new calm, maybe. But does that calm, you know, necessarily engender an extremely positive outlook, the positive outlook he carries forward with him?
Well, I guess maybe it has a little bit to do with whatever happened when he had that epiphany. He seemed to get something from the Creator, don't you think? With the, I don't know if we actually talked about this, but when Nynaeve went to look to see, to sense the madness in him after she healed, what was the Ashaman's name that she healed from the madness? And then she went and to look at Rand's head, and there was the weapon. She could see the madness, but he was like being protected. I took it to mean that he was being, the madness was there, but it's like there was a buffer there and he was being protected. And I kind of just thought that after he had his epiphany and all this Rand Zen-ness going on, that was something from the Creator. Like, okay, you have ascended to a certain point where now you are able to handle this power that I give you so you can defeat the Dark One. I don't know. That could be just totally out there, but that's just kind of how I interpreted it. And now I can't even remember why I said that. So I said, I don't even remember what I was saying.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense to me because at some level, right, Rand, you know, there is a, I'm trying to remember sort of, you know, the analogy, there's a religious analogy about giving up the fight. And when you're finally able to give up the battle and let yourself go, that's when actually you make the connection to the higher power.
Right.
Right. And in a sense, that is what Rand has done.
Right. It's very similar to embracing the source as well for women.
Gosh, that makes me think of this. How you control side arc. You know, you have to control this massive power by surrendering. Yeah.
You have to give into it. It's so wow. Yeah, that's very...
Well, that leads me to think of our mysterious third power that we don't know even if it exists, but we hope it does, because otherwise the scale is unbalanced.
Yeah.
So maybe that...
You know, this just constantly reminds me of depths and breadth of this series. I mean, when you think that this all came out of the mind of one man.
I know.
Un-freaking believable. There's so much going on in this.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
By the way, Carrie, it was Nynaeve that Nynaeve healed before she delved Rand.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Thank you.
The one that saw the Murdral tracking him around,
right.
That worked
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And that description of the madness and sort of picking away at that, and I thought that was a brilliant piece.
Yeah,
and really, really gave a very different insight into what Nynaeve's healing technique is and how that is, in a sense, so different than what they've done before.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that wasn't really. It wasn't even really healing. She said that she hadn't really even healed him. She just. He used the power to pull these thorns, this net of darkness, out of his mind. I think she says actually it wasn't even a healing. She hasn't even actually used a healing weave.
Right. Instead of healing a wound, it was like she was just taking, you know, if you had thorn stuck in your thumb. Well, she's not healing that piercing that you have to your skin. She's just taking the thorn out. It's kind of, but still, nobody else has figured this out at this point. You know, no.
I know.
And it's 98 every time that, well, not every time.
Well.
You know, the other.
Well,
Naive and Egwene and Elaine developing Tarangreal and doing all these other things. You know, it's really, I'm going to diverge here for a second, but it's really a sad commentary on the Aes Sedai. One wonders if the creation of the White Tower wasn't actually a bad thing for the Aes Sedai, because the way that they, you know, segregated themselves and hedged themselves around with rules and everything probably prevented a lot of the innovation and development and growth that they might have seen otherwise.
Yeah, well, and I think Rand puts it best. In this same section, Nynaeve tells him that Egwene has called her back to the tower, and he says, don't let them ruin you.
Yeah.
And goes on to explain that your passion is a part of you. I tried to be like them, though I wouldn't have admitted it. Cold, always in control, it nearly destroyed me. That is strength to some, but it is not the only type of strength. Perhaps you could learn to control yourself a little more, but I like you as you are. It makes you genuine. I would not see you become another perfect Aes Sedai with a painted mask of a face and no care for the feelings and emotions of others.
Yeah.
The Aes Sedai, to be Aes Sedai is to be calm, Nynaeve replied. To be Aes Sedai is to be what you decide it is, Rand said. Moraine cared. You could see it in her even when she was calm. The best Aes Sedai I've known are the ones who others complain aren't what an Aes Sedai should be.
Wow.
I loved that. And I loved
it. Yeah, so much for Castwing and her rules, huh?
Actually, the conclusion that that's not what she wanted. You know, she'd rather live for what she wanted to do in her life and what she thought was important than the Aes Sedai. And if that meant that she had to lose that, then she accepted it.
Because that was always funny with Nynaeve. You know, she fought tooth and nail and really didn't want to be Aes Sedai. She wanted to destroy Moraine. She didn't want anything to do with the power mongers and the manipulators. And then she ended up becoming more Aes Sedai than some of the Aes Sedai for a while. And then she just realized that it would be better for her, for the world, for Rand, for everybody, if she had to just move past that, she'd just move on without him.
Right.
It was a very Nynaeve decision to make, really.
Mm-hmm.
As she tugs her braid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Can you really picture Nynaeve ever being calm? I mean, I just don't see it.
More so now than previously.
Yeah.
Strangely, Virginia, I'm just the opposite. I can picture her more calm as the village wisdom trying to attend to someone who was ill. You know, obviously she's simmering because she's able to channel, which means that she has to be angry enough to channel and heal them. But still, she's acting in a calm fashion, you know, mixing her herbs and preparing teas and such.
Yeah, she's very calm with certain things, but I mean, when you just know that something's getting to her, you know, and she's just, and she
hugs
her braid, like, it's kind of, I guess maybe she could mask it, but she wouldn't be herself then. She would be.
I know, she's got all these buttons, and you push them, and she just goes off, you know?
Yeah.
But that's what everyone loves about her. I mean, some people really don't like her, I guess, as a character, and there were times where it did bother me, like her, Elaine, especially with the way that they sometimes treated Matt and all that. But I still really respect her character.
Well, that was actually a, I thought, a major coup on Robert Jordan's part, because she was really descending into rigidity. Her character was getting really boxed in and almost cartoon-like. It was so rigid and so predictable and so annoying to a lot of people. And then Robert Jordan wrote it in to the point where, and I forgot, I guess it was probably at the point where she nearly drowned and let go, or she started changing, and Lon obviously made a big difference in her too, but her character totally evolved just within a really short space of time. I mean, she still has a lot of the same character flaws and personality traits, but she almost made a bigger jump in her little
spread out epiphany than Rand did in some ways. I mean, Rand is a lot closer to being back to what he was when he started out than anything else. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. he didn't have the Jesus complex going on, but, you know, the saintliness that he has now. I shouldn't say that because he really doesn't have, you know, less going on. That's not really true, but he has a saintliness about him that he did not have, you know, as the ignorant farm boy, but he's still a lot closer in personality than some. I think really the only one that hasn't changed that much is really Matt.
Yeah,
so
has even
pushed it up a little.
Way. But I think that this is kind of a good jumping point, you know, to kind of go into Nynaeve a little bit, because you mentioned here how Lon had kind of helped to progress her character and change her character a lot. And, you know, we finally get to see her get Lon's bond in this book, finally. But even before that, you know, I think we kind of want to talk about and tell me what you think of the Aes Sedai test that she had to go through. The test for the shawl.
Yeah.
And how out of control it was, right? The fact that it nearly killed her.
Well, I think it nearly kills a lot of them, probably more than they let on. But I think, you know, even Egwene said they made it unnecessarily cruel because she provoked them so much in so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the only benchmark we really have to measure it against is Moraine's test in New Spring, and this was absolutely nothing like that.
No.
Yeah.
This was magnitudes worse. And, you know, and the test itself was bad enough, but then they had the gall afterwards to try and tell her that she failed.
Yeah, don't you love it?
Oh, I love the tongue lashing she gave them. Oh,
I like what Egwene said. You know, do you really want to deny the shawl to the wife of the king of Malkyr and the woman who cleansed the Taint on Sidene with the dragon reborn?
The best link the tower currently has to the dragon reborn and to the king of Malkyr. Yeah, but
do you really want to go there, ladies?
Yeah. And I'm going to try and find it to read it, because I have a feeling that it's going to be that what Nynaeve says is going to be similar to in meaning to what Rand said. And it's going to take me a while because.
And I had another thought about Rand, too, when we were talking about him, and I totally lost it. I don't know if it'll come back or not. It was more cogent to what we were already discussing than now, though, but I just lost it.
When
you know what? I should probably have a pen and paper or computer or something here to take notes. So anything
else? I have a question for you as well when we're ready.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, I'm going to be a while, so go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, you know, that was actually it. Thank you. That was actually the question. Go ahead. I'll remember now.
I was going to ask, do you think, so the question, I guess, from this episode with Rand in Towers of Midnight is, do you think that he's learned, as Katswani wanted him to, how to laugh and how to cry? Has that come full circle?
Oh, so that's
Spencer,
a similar question, right? Didn't you, Spencer, or is he off looking up the...
What was
he's
that?
Looking up
the, you had a similar question about, is that... but you thought a little bit differently about what Cad Swain was going to teach Rand in the office.
I
thought that what Daniel just said, that was what it was, but then Spencer had another idea about it.
She's also not only going to teach Rand something, but he and all the Ashman,
right.
Which
and that's what
yeah.
I mean. That's the thing.
The dark ones,
right?
As well.
Yeah. Well. To touch on, I'm going to give up on the Nynaeve for now, so that I can actually focus on. But to touch on what Daniel was talking about, the pact that she made with, I think it was Sorelia, wasn't it? Sorelia.
Yeah.
That they would teach the Dragon Reborn to laugh and to cry. I really think that.
Actually, the Karakarn, you know.
Yeah, the Karakarn, the Dragon Reborn to laugh and to cry. I think that really did happen, especially with the second reunion with Tam. I think is that they all got to see you know, the final fruition of whatever schemes they had kicked up. You know, the first meeting with Tam might have seemed disastrous, which, you know, it kind of was, but as their last ditch effort, it was actually, when you think about it, it was actually the trigger that finally got him
right.
to seriously evaluate his life and change things.
Well, it may be the trigger, but I guess the question that I had was, you know, Rand if I can say, the new Rand seems much more in touch with his emotions as a character. And so, to me, teaching someone how to laugh and how to cry has an implication that you have an emotive streak. You have a sort of connection to your emotions that is not the sort of cold remove. And that doesn't seem to come until the beginning of Towers of Midnight.
Right.
Yeah, well, I think we really did see it right there, the last sentence of the Gathering Storm. But yeah, we really see it come out in Towers of Midnight. He is. Let's grab this topic by the nose ring and yank it back with us along, like any other unruly bull.
And that makes me think of Young Bull and Perrin. No, God.
Okay, talk about Perrin. We're good.
No. I don't want to talk about Perrin.
I actually have a question for you guys that goes back to when we were talking about possibly being a third source. So with Rand and all this special powers that he seems to have now, or abilities, is he...
Far beyond those of mortal men.
Yeah. Is he, do you take it that he is basically turned on all the time, like Avienda's children?
Ooh. Holding the sword all the time?
That could mean that he is tapped into this other possible, but then again, I don't know, this is just something that I was thinking, that he could be kind of tapped into it, into this third unknown source from the creator, right, at all times, and maybe he's not. Because it's different, maybe he's not actually understanding it.
Well, I don't want to belabor the apple scene, but what aspect of either the true power or the one power that we've seen before could make that happen?
It couldn't.
It's
that is purely
that's completely the same with what his in his with him being able to tell who the Dark Friends are and them going mad when they see him by saying, oh, he's so bright, and they gouge out their eyes. And
the clouds cover and all of that.
His brain being protected from the madness and all that. That is all coming, I imagine, from the Creator. So is there something else going on, like another
thing? Yeah, this...
Right? That he's turned into.
Well, I think a lot of it is... I think the apples and the food in Bandari Bon can be attributed to the fact that he is Taveren, and now because he I don't know how to explain the fact that, you know, I don't even know how to explain in the Gathering Storm why he was having a purely negative effect. Or why in this book he's having a purely positive effect.
I would disagree with that, Spencer, because so far, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so far the Taveren effects that we've seen have been explainable within the rules of natural or natural power, natural law. Right? So someone falls off a building and survives, that's explainable. Right? A bunch of people get married. That's explainable. Someone, you know, trips on a little root and dies. That's explainable, even positive or negative. But the apples reblossoming and the food that was spoiled not being spoiled, that's a different category to me.
The apples, yes. The food, though, was purely a thing of chance.
That's
the
true.
Fact
that
I disagree. I really think all that food was spoiled, and it was, you know, it was like a water into wine sort of thing. He tried to pass it off in a way that it didn't look like a big miracle type thing, but
I think he
unspoiled everything they hadn't looked at.
Well
the thing is, that's not the way that Jordan's world worked.
I know, but this is all new.
I'm wondering if there are effects. What are the effects of someone using the true power? Or when they tap into it?
Besides the saw, they don't really say. They just say it's intensely addictive.
Well, and it drives them insane.
Right.
And not the kind of insane that the taint drives them, and even creepier insane.
And they get the black saw or whatever going across their eyes and all that, right? But we don't know.
Yeah, and over a long enough period of time, the saw progressed into the flaming eyes and mouth that Baphomil had, and that Eshamiel had in the first books.
I didn't know that. Where did you read that?
Oh,
that's a good question. Let me find it.
I never connected those two. That's a big oops on my part, I guess.
Yeah, it's...
There are effects that we don't know of, like from using the true source or this other unknown source, if it exists. What if the effects of channeling that source, that power, can do this stuff? Do you know what I mean? Some things like that. It's just I don't know.
Well, do we know of negative Tavarin? Of people who have been, let me do this a different way. Do we know of dark Tavarin?
I don't think we do right now. I'm not saying that they cannot. In fact, we know that they can be if the... Oh, yeah, here it is. Oh, wow, this is a long Q&A. But I think that if the pattern for some reason needed a Tavarin that was a dark friend, then we would have one. At this point in time, I don't think that we do.
Let me throw a crazy theory out for you. What if the third power relates to the Tavarin, the piece of being Tavarin? And in fact, anyone who is Tavarin has access to this third power, and that Rand, in a sense, has gotten there by virtue of what happened with his epiphany. That Tavarin is only one sort of minor flare-up of the third power, but that what he has now is taking that to a whole different level.
But then if there was a dark friend that was Tavarin, would they be able to tap into that source?
Well, just like Rand is supposedly light at this point and can tap into the true power.
Yes, but the dark one let him for reasons, because we know that the dark one has his own reasons for that. Right.
Well, the dark one has to give permission to his followers, right. but Rand was never his follower per se, and he just took hold of it. But then he's the Dragon Reborn; nobody else is.
But didn't I just thought there was a reason that he let that happen?
Yeah, that's a point of contention.
Wasn't that in the Smaragd's? And wasn't she thinking that or before?
I think it was a Grendel point of view, but that was a big point of contention, that still is in several theory boards and such, is whether Rand was able to access the true power through his link with Moradin, or if Rand was granted access to the true power by the Dark One. And I personally don't know. I'm not even sure what my own belief about this is right now, because
I do think that he could get it through Moradin, and I think that was talked about before, but I thought that there would be some kind of hint that that's what he was doing, like the saw going across his eyes or something. I don't know.
I don't remember the exact quote, and I was trying to see if I could find anything, but I think the quote in the text from one of the Forsaken is something along the lines of, you know, they could channel the true power, but to do so without the permission of the Great Lord would result in some dire consequences. Is how it read to me. I think the wording was such that could be read either way. To me, it read, you can channel it, but without permission, it's not going to be a good thing. But in the Encyclopedia Watt article, it says that in the Age of Legends, only 30 were given the privilege of being able to channel by the
right.
Great Lord. So
right.
I don't know.
Morgedion said that to Morden when she first met him. She was trying to impress him with her knowledge and said, you know, only a select few were ever given the, you know, ability to do it. So it was much more common at some point in time, but
Yeah, and you know, kind of from the Grendel, the first Grendel point of view in the prologue of Towers of Midnight, you know, she can trickle only she can channel only a little trickle of the true
mm-hmm.
power. So whereas Moradin, you know, has full access to use it in place of Sadine, basically. It sounds like there is some that there is some control over the actual amount of power that the Great Lord gives you access to, unless she was exercising control herself on the amount that she knew she was okay. I don't know. That doesn't make too much sense. So we don't know. We don't know if Rand was given access to the true power or if he took it through Moradin.
Well, I don't know. I could go either way on that one.
Yeah, I think I come down personally more on the side of he was given access. The whole setup with Semirog, you know, with Semirog being freed by Shadar Haran, I think was such an obvious setup.
Mm-hmm.
For her to be bale-fired out of existence with the true power.
Maybe. But Morden and Rand are linked to the point now that it wouldn't surprise me at all if he was able to access it under stress like that. I mean, there have been all these little hints that there's a direct physical linkage between the two of them. Morden is obviously suffering, you know, pain in his hand or limited use of his hand since Semirog did what she did.
Yeah.
So, talking about Morden and Rand's link, do we think that Min's version of Rand merging in with someone else is what happened with Rand and Luthien, like he thinks? Or is it still to come with the Zen Rand and Morden?
Zen Rand, I love that.
No, what to call him?
Yeah. I know.
Yeah,
it's all Benny.
It's an adequate question. I don't know. Really quickly, as an aside, I found the quote from Robert Jordan saying that they saw eventually become the Fire Eyes. And for those of you playing along at home, you can find that by going to bit.ly/WOT interviews, W-O-T interviews. And it was under the One Power, True Power, Channeling, and Angriel subsection. Anyway, about the merging, though, Carrie, I don't know. Back before we had the curious case of Rand and Luthien on top of Dragonmount, that didn't work as well as I thought it would. Never mind. Back before we had the epiphany on Dragonmount, I was kind of the opinion that, you know, the last battle would be won with what some refer to as the body swap theory, which is somehow through means unknown, Rand and Morden would switch bodies, and so Rand would no longer be in this weird and perfect shell that he has picked up, and he would get transferred into Moradin's almost perfect body and live out the rest of his days in that somehow. Now I'm not so sure, because a lot of my belief in that theory was the fact that Luthien was in Rand's head, and so it seemed like the consciousnesses, the kind of souls, were a little more loose than they are now. I mean, now Rand is very much a solid individual. So I don't know if the merging would be him and Morden, although that would be a very interesting thing to have happen.
Yeah.
Although
well,
might be
merge with somebody. You know, I wanted to bring up something else, and this is really, it's tangential, but not too badly. There were a couple, I'm actually rereading Gathering Storm again because I didn't quite finish my reread before I got to Tellers of Midnight, and then I'm going to read Tellers again. But it was mentioned that when Perrin goes to the wolf dream, the colors don't work when he thinks of Rand and Matt. And when Rand goes to Tel Arondreod, Lucerne isn't in his head. And he has that scene with Morden where they sit in front of the fire and chat for a little while, both in Gathering Storm. And then there were a couple of mentions in, I believe, Towers of Midnight, too. But why is it that the linkages that they have don't seem to work in Tel Arondreod? Everything else seems to. I mean, I think he can still even feel the bonds with Elaine and Alana and the others when he's in Tel Arondreod, just more distantly. But he doesn't have the swirling colors linkage or the Lucerne linkage.
Well, is it the same reason that the connection to Tel Arondreod wouldn't work necessarily in the land of the Elfin and the Elfin? I mean, what we haven't tested that, I don't think, but my supposition is that the viewing of the colors is another world that's connected to this one, that somehow is different than Tel Arondreod, but is a link to a different space of or a place of being, and so that place is accessible from our world or from Rand's world, but not necessarily from Tel Arondreod.
I would have never made that connection. I just assumed it was a linkage. Not really a physical one, but something like the bond, the water bond or something.
Yeah. I kind of assume that the visions that they see are of the Rand, Matt, and Perrin that are in this world, that they actually see those persons. And so
they seem to be real time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I
agree that it's real time, but it's real time with a view through a different lens. Right. So again, this goes back to this third, maybe it goes back to this third para concept, and maybe I'm not explaining it as well as I can, but if you buy that, being Taverin gives you access to some unexplained power, right? And for the sake of whatever argument, we have the true power, we have the one power, let's call this the really, really true power, or I don't know, the creator's
the wheel power.
The wheel power, right.
Oh, that's so confusing the way he did that, the one power, the true source. I mean, oh my God.
I know.
Yeah, the true source is the one power, but it's, yeah.
but anyway, if you buy that being Taverin gives you access to this sort of greater power of some variety, and maybe it is the greater power, or the creator's power, then you know maybe in a sense the colors again are a manifestation of that in some significant way, and that what this is giving you is the creator's touch, because we've seen the Dark One's touch on the world. We've speculated the creator doesn't get involved in the world in any significant way because that's not the creator's interest. But maybe this is the way that happens. This is the power itself.
But it doesn't have anything to do with the true or the one or the actual real or the any kind of power, because Perrin and Matt don't have any channeling abilities, and they see the swirling colors. Actually, I think it was
I kind of see them like, oh, I don't know, that they're, Rand is the most powerful, like, as we know, the most powerful Taverin, and, you know, since Lucerne, and he needs Matt and Perrin. They're extremely powerful in their own rights. So when we see that they think of them, they're always like, oh, I can't think of them, those colors, ugh, we don't want to see it, right? But there's going to come a time where maybe they need to know where they need to know what's going on exactly.
Oh yeah, during the last battle,
kind of like
Rand
knew a little bit, but and then maybe we'll be able to. They might be able to do a little bit more because they've never actually tested anything with those visions out. What if Rand could say, "Yeah, I need you." Like, what if he can? What if they can communicate and they didn't?
Watson, I need you. Come here.
Yeah. Okay, Matt, where the hell are you? The last battle has started. go find the horn.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely, I love that. But I guess that kind of brings up another thing that's been sort of bugging me, and I meant to bring it up earlier, but as far as we know, and of course we don't know everything about all the previous incarnations of the dragon or anything like that, but even Maureen speculated on the oddness of it, that there are three, not one, but three Tavarin linked, and these two boys are linked to the Dragon Reborn, strongly Tavarin, and so forth, and there's never been any record of that ever happening. So why, if all of these years we just had one champion for the Shadow, now why we have a trinity of champions that are linked together in some ways and need each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Why is that?
Well, my personal theory on that one is that it's similar to magnetic induction, which is, you know, when you have one powerful magnet and then you stick a paperclip on it, the paperclip is
right.
Now magnetic as well. And that's my own personal theory on that, on why Matt and Perrin are themselves Tavarin, because Rand, we know, is orders of magnitude greater Tavarin than Artur Hawkwing, who was, you know, one of the strongest Tavarin in recorded history. So,
then why wouldn't everybody else that was close to him suddenly become Tavarin if that's true? I can't buy that.
Who's to say they haven't? Well, Matt and Perrin are definitely the closest to Rand in terms of threads of the pattern. Physical proximity, not so much, especially right now.
They were born within like 3 months or whatever of each other.
Yeah, they were very close friends all growing up. You know, and who's to say, we've seen Egwene have some really kind of fortuitous things happen that don't make sense, but could be attributed to Tavarin twisting, if there were a Tavarin about, which there's not.
Well, Robert Jordan has said that no other major characters are Tavarin.
Yes, I know that.
That doesn't mean that they don't have some of the effects of Tavarin-ness.
Like, it could be at times, but I know, you know, because she would be with the people that can... I can see Tavarin, because now there's a few of them, like after all these books.
Yeah. I'm not saying that Egwene is Tavarin. I'm saying that the pattern is weaving her and those around her, namely the White Tower sisters, in such a way as to be profitable to the three Tavarin.
Right.
Which requires some leaps
and circumstances. They are so close in age and... you know, mail, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe a key or something like that could...
I don't know. The
business of the people that can see Tavarin not seeing Egwene or Nynaeve, that doesn't necessarily hold water because they've only ever seen male Tavarin, and we don't know, maybe female people with that talent can only see male Tavarin and
that's
not
true.
Female.
That's true.
Well, the quote from Robert Jordan is that there are no that none of the major female characters are Tavarin.
Right, I know.
And he goes on further to say that he threw in the word major just so that people would have something to argue about.
I'm sure he did.
But
right,
kind of going back though to the original thought here is why wasn't there the color swirling in Teleron on Riad? And it's not Teleron on Riad, I know that. It's Teleron on Riad, but...
whatever.
I can't say things right. I'm sorry. But
though the Wolf Dream, either one.
Yeah, the Wolf Dream, yeah. I think it might have something to do with the way that they exist in the dream world. I think, obviously, unless they actually, you know, open up a gateway and go there physically... it's just a portion of their being that goes there. I mean, we think of our own kind of mythologies and religions of today, the body and the spirit are two separate beings almost. And that's kind of how it seems to me the dream world works, is your body stays put, your body stays in bed, while your spirit or soul goes into the dream world, and it doesn't take with it all the weird connections and such that your brain and body through use of the power have made, or Tavarin-ness or whatever. And so when Rand goes, it's Rand's soul that goes. It's not the loose Theron crazy portion of his brain, and it's not his connection to Morden or to we don't even know if he felt the warder bond at all, or to the other two Teverin. It's just him and his purest essence.
You make it sound like astral traveling.
Isn't his soul what's reborn, though? So shouldn't his soul still have loose therein now that they're kind of...
Yeah, that is the biggest hole in my personal theory, is the fact that, yes, but he's a hero of the Horn going to Tel Aaron on Riyadh. Shouldn't he have access to all of these memories? Which, the fact that he doesn't that mean that the
physical has or whatever, like it's not,
he's
not madness anymore because he's not mad anymore because his brain is being protected by, you know, the glowing stuff.
Yeah, but we haven't really seen, especially from his point of view, we haven't seen him in Teller and Onryod since then, unless you think that the last thing with Mirren happened there, which I don't know about that. That's something you need to talk about at some point in time.
I can't believe that we haven't talked about that.
Wait a second, I didn't hear that. What?
Well, one of the last scenes in the epilogue with Rand and Mirren, Lanfear.
Oh, okay, Mirren, yeah, Mirren.
Hey, I almost died when it said "and desire." Isn't that what it said? I was like, what?
Wait a minute, what? Yeah, I know.
What? Okay, no, we cannot have a...
I'm sorry, what was that, Carrie? We can have a what? A full-de-do? Is that what I heard?
She's stammering with anger.
I am. I'm just so, like, because all the words I want to say, I can't say. But it's like, no, you can't do that. Like, okay, I get it that he's Luz Theron, and Luz Theron was in love with her at one point, but he got over her, and I don't think that, because when he was in love with his wife, Elena, I don't think he would ever, Ileana, or, you know.
Ileana, yeah.
I don't think that he would, I would hope that, I thought that desire was gone when she turned evil, and I guess Rand
was a
woman in need.
You just want to say, dude, that is so last age. Get over her.
Like, come on, no, the word desire, why did that have to be thrown in there? I was just so blown away by that. I can see Rand going
just
to whatever, save a stupid woman, even though she's evil and all that stuff, because that is what he would do. But I just can't believe
that
he felt desire. I was just, and I know he already has
like a viper or something, a curling viper, or...
You know,
it's force of habit, Carrie. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Like a seething viper within him. The desire was like a seething viper within him. Obviously, Luthera loved Elaine. Yeah. Love Elena. Loved Elena.
Elena.
However you want to pronounce her name. And Rand, of course, loves his three women. You think he'd have enough?
He can't have three Tavir and three women. It's like he needs the number three.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Apparently, Luz Theron's dead wife split into thirds when she was reborn. I don't know. But
yeah, we've got the three Wonder Girls. You know. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, there had to have been something more between Luz Theron and Mirren, besides just the fact that Mirren was infatuated with him, for her to turn so completely to the dark when he chose Ileana.
Oh, there was definitely, I believe, quite a bit between them, right? But I just was under the impression that
they knew each other in the biblical sense.
Right. Okay. Yes. But I always was under the impression that after she chose the dark one and went over to the dark, did you notice I didn't say like the great Lord or anything like that, but after she chose that you know, he just lost his respect and whatever love was left, like, you know what I mean? Like,
he lost the respect for Lanfear. I don't think that he would have ever lost the whatever love he had for Mirren. It obviously wasn't as great as his love for Ilyana.
Well, it's not like he was burned by 13.
Guys, it's just a desire. He lost his respect for her. He doesn't love her anymore. That doesn't mean she's not fully hot.
Well,
that's true.
That's all it is. It's just desire. He still has the lust. That's all.
This is why we keep you around, to put the rough edge on these things, because we were both kind of skirting around trying not to say that.
I'm sorry, you keep Virginia around to add lust? Is that what you were trying to say?
No, to
comic relief.
Yeah, that too. To bring out these sharp and pointed comments, you know, we'll skirt around it for a while, and she'll just be like, "No, that's."
Who's ringing?
Somebody. I don't know.
Not me.
I'm sorry.
I don't know if I'm just too naive or whatever, but I was thinking, if somebody's evil, and you know them personally, that just kind of gets, just doesn't do anything for, I don't know, I guess that's just me, but I don't know. Morden's supposed to be hot. If he came up in here in my bedroom, I don't think I'd be, like, panting after him.
Well.
But you never know.
I don't know. It depends on if he's your type or not. I don't know.
wait. Carrie, why would Morden be coming up to your bedroom?
Yeah, really.
Sure, you're not a dark friend.
Yeah.
He did refer to the Great Lord one time. She got
caught.
Oh,
yeah. I don't mind that one, too.
Yeah.
I remember it.
Well, see, the difference is that Lucerne and Marin had a history together. It's not like she disappeared in his bedroom and it was like, oh, wow, you're good looking, you know. They had whatever relationship they had in the Age of Legends. And there's obviously, you know, no matter, you know, you just can't turn affection and, you know, attraction and everything off and on. Look at how many people in the real world stay with somebody that they know is bad for them because they honestly love them and they just can't stop loving them. And even if it's a toxic relationship, they stay in it. You know, there's that. I mean, it didn't say he felt love for her anymore. He felt desire because he'd had desire for her before and that never went away. She didn't change that much. It just, her morals offended him and whatever she did offended him to the point where he broke off the relationship. But everything that he liked about her besides that was still there.
Well, I guess because I was in a relationship before that the person did a lot of things that I didn't agree with and I could never desire them, like, because of the things that they had done.
Yeah, well, you're probably a stronger person in a lot of ways than Lucerne was. But
Brand is just a weak, weak man.
Maybe it's a guy thing. I don't know. Maybe desire is a bigger deal with guys. I don't know. What do you guys think? Clueless in here. We don't.
Spencer,
we don't want
Spencer,
to do this.
You?
I don't know. Too much credit. I mean, he's already got three women. You know that he's.
I know.
Yeah.
We're gonna do.
I don't know.
Wait. We're gonna do the standard Robert Jordan thing. Like, you know, women don't understand men, and men don't understand women. Okay. We don't.
I don't know. As I'm pretty sure that the only single guy here I don't know, with three women, I'm not sure that I would have desire for a fourth. Really? Three women? Three?
Tuckered out.
That's more than enough. Okay, thank you. No,
so
but,
I'm gonna make another.
Aren't you allowed? Spencer, I mean.
Well, I was gonna make another crossover and talk about Big Love, actually.
Oh, okay.
Do you watch Big Love?
No.
I haven't. No.
It's the HBO series about the multiply married family that starts with a man and three wives, and ultimately there is some discussion about adding a fourth.
Wow.
So, you know,
watched that show, The Sister Wives or whatever. Though it's like a reality show. Same kind of thing, except it's reality.
Reality I've ever had.
I know of no television show that is reality. I'm just going to throw that out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think most of them are pretty fake, even if they call them
reality. Television. That's the biggest oxymoron in today's.
Yeah. But Spencer, all this polygamy and everything, like, you know, like, shouldn't that be okay? I mean, aren't you allowed for that?
No, we believe in honoring, obeying, and sustaining the law.
Okay.
That's from a long time ago.
Okay.
Yeah, the Mormons have not practiced polygamy for many
years,
many generations.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, my bad. I don't claim knowledge here.
There is biblical. I mean, you go back to some of the religious overtones. There's lots of biblical precedent for it.
Oh yeah. That's true. It's all over in the Bible, every place in the Old Testament.
Well, yeah,
certainly was.
Why is it always men that have all these wives and not the women that have all kinds of husbands?
Because then you would never know who the father was.
Who cares if it's all family?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it'd be kind of like the Greens having lots of warders. You know, it's like the more the merrier.
Yeah, but
you can never have too many handymen around. Let me tell you.
And on
to steer this in a slightly different direction. I don't know if it's just me, but I think the word desire, the way it's used, refers to more than just physical attraction.
Yeah, I don't know, probably. Like I said, he's still everything that she was that attracted him before was still there, except that she did evil things.
It had been laid bare so much too. I mean, in this point in time, you know, the fact that she's what does it say that she's practically? Well, not that she's practically, that she is being tortured daily.
Yeah, that would tug at his heartstrings. I mean, I don't think he's
being tortured, or is this a plot?
Well, I don't think so.
That's an interesting question, right? Isn't Lanphier still in a mind trap, and who would be able to really?
Sindine or what's her name? Sindine,
who is Lanphier reborn, has a Korsuva that is held by Morden.
By Morden,
which means that Morden and Shae Dar-Haran can do whatever the heck they want to her, pretty much.
So wouldn't that argue that, in a sense, her appearance in Lan's dream is actually something that Morden is pushing?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Unless she found a way to
well,
Lanphier was very, like with the world of dreams, she could do a lot. Maybe there's some kind of loophole or something.
That's true, yeah. Maybe in her dreams she could escape some of the effects of the mind trap.
I'm really torn on, at first I'm like, oh, she's just, this, you know, it's a ploy. And then I'm like, oh, no, maybe she really is, you know, being tortured, but whatever, I really don't care. But I'm not Rand. I don't have pity for women. Like, make her bad. She can lie in it. Whatever she wants. I don't know. It's, I guess we'll find out, huh?
It's a wrap,
I just had this ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous crossover, but I sort of had this vision of Rand as Sting from The Police, the singer. When Sinead O'Connor did some of her very famous blunders, he said, oh, I love Sinead O'Connor. She can do whatever she wants for all I care. I just sort of had this mental image of Rand sort of feeling that about Lanphier. You know, he said, I still love her. She can do whatever she wants. I don't care. I'm losing it, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm totally losing it.
I guess I just thought with this news, like, I mean, I could picture Rand from book two, you know, or whatever, Feeling Desire, you know, because he's just, ooh, whatever, he's, you know, young dude.
Yeah.
I just pictured this new Rand that we get introduced.
You thought he'd be better than that, huh?
I did. I really, really did. I don't know. And I guess...
Well.
Whatever, and maybe it could be taken in other ways, but I was just really, when I read that, I was mad.
Aww.
I don't know why. It just, I felt like, you know, he was, because can you imagine, like, he goes out and risks his neck or whatever the heck he's going to do, and Elaine and Evie and then Min are just going to be so peeved at him, because, you know, he's a dragon.
You did what with who?
Well, it's just he's not supposed. He should be looking at the last battle, not going out saving someone who already is in the position that she's in because of choices that she made. So let her live with her own choices.
What if the end of this book is that Rand decides? What if the end of this book is that Rand decides to bag this whole last battle thing and all this dying on the slopes of Shale Ghul and all this kind of stuff and runs off with Meryn?
Yeah.
That's it. I'm done. You guys can have it.
I'm gone. Bye.
I'm out of here.
And the two of them leave riding Bella into the sunset.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't know. On a more serious note, though, this whole Meryn scene is
serious. I was dead serious.
I'll be dead serious. Sorry, Virginia, that gave it away. But how do you think it happened? Because we know that Rand shields his dreams, so she wouldn't be able to come into his dreams. And I don't think that he would be exploring Tel Aaron on Riad. So do you think that somehow he encroached back into Morden's dreams and somehow got connected with her that way? Or how in the world do you think that he is talking with Cynthia at this point?
He controls.
You know what Moraine told him? That the wards will shield you from outside influences, but they can't shield you from what's within. Or she told Perrin that, maybe, I don't know. But, you know, maybe that's just something that's lurking in the back of his mind. He still has a thing for her.
But there was more to it than just the thing for her. That there was the information, that there was the whole I'm being tortured thing.
And is it that he has a thing for her? That Luce Theron has a thing for her? Or that Moradin has a thing for her, right? I mean, so if truly it can come from within, and you know, where are we sort of in the Moradin Rand connection? Could this be Moradin's dream projected into Rand's dream?
That's scary.
No,
why not? They're connected. I don't think the wards would ward against Moradin.
Yes,
because they have a connection.
But Syndane wouldn't appeal to Moradin like that ever.
How do you know?
And Moradin is most likely the one who's instigating the torture, just because he's the type of person. And Lanfear says,
or he's getting shut her on or whatever.
Well, Moradin's the one with her mind trap. And Moradin is the kind of person, and Syndane knows that he's the kind of person. It would be pointless. In fact, he would probably join the torture in some good old fun, good old-fashioned fun.
But what if she, knowing, but there's a lot she doesn't know, so I was going to say maybe she sensed somehow that this connection was between them.
If she somehow figured out that Moradin is connected to Rand and somehow utilized her connection to Moradin to connect to Rand, it's way convoluted. I don't know.
So let me take this one other direction. Regardless of why she's there or how she's there, does that mean that she has a part to play in the last battle? And is that part to play to be the person who sacrifices herself for the light in the final act?
Yeah, it could very well be. I mean, we've heard.
I kind of thought that of that as well.
We've heard since
she might try and redeem herself in some way.
Yeah, we've heard since book one that no person has been so long in the shadow that they cannot turn to the light. And that would be the ultimate payoff of that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of the Forsaken. I like to go a little bit more, romanticize it, and say, no, Moradin's going to turn. No. Syndane turning would actually be more in line with what has already been said.
Well, wait a second. You bring up an interesting point, Spencer. That's an interesting point. We always assume that, you know, we hear over and over again that the Dark One has turned the Light's champion to the Shadow and had him fight for the Shadow. Why can't Moradin turn to the Light and be made to serve the Light? If the Dark One's champion can be turned, so can the Light. I mean, if the Light One's champion can be turned, then so can the Dark One's.
Yeah.
I like that.
I wonder. I wonder if that has any connection to the merging vision that Min had.
Yeah, I think so. Because how can Rand merge with him if he's going to be dark? Now that Rand, especially now that we have Zen Rand, saintly Zen Rand,
Well, he's not going to be merging with no dark friends.
I used to think he was going to, like, merge with Moradin and somehow take over the True Source, and that's how he was going to, you know, do in the Dark One somehow or whatever while he was merged with Moradin, and kind of almost like he was going to jump in his body and take over. I had this, like, weird vision going up. But then after the whole Zen Ran thing, I don't know if I really feel that way anymore.
Well, actually, I'm going to do a major spoiler here. I actually know the ending of the book, and what's going to happen is that we're going to find out that the Dark One actually just got really bored of all this waiting and just, you know, jumped off a cliff and killed himself. So there isn't going to be a last battle. It's just going to end.
Thing says something about Rand's journey in this book, and, you know, the dream sequence sort of leads us to who Rand, maybe what the pressure points will be for Rand in A Memory of Light, this sort of this tension for good and this tension for, you know, who he has been, I think is going to play a major role in who he becomes through A Memory of Light. The piece that we're missing, that we haven't really talked about, is his interaction with the leaders of the Borderlands.
That was weird. That was all very odd.
Really? They had a death wish?
Seriously.
They wanted to kill themselves and their entire countries with their entire armies and, you know, the whole rest of the world. Let's just take our whole army, march down to find the Dragon Reborn, the supposed Dragon Reborn, an unstable man who can channel.
And smack him around.
And
smack down on him. I thought that was crazy enough when Cad Swain did it, to be honest with you.
I love the line that Rand gives. If I had come 1 week earlier,
yeah, really?
Not only would I have not have been able to answer your question, but I would have killed you dead, flat out, you would be gone. And they say, well, you can't channel the true one power here. And he's like,
That's right.
Can't channel here. And he says, the Guardian only protects against the one power. And I'm like, creepy.
Yeah, but I can't channel the one power. That's true.
Creepy. There's so many good lines from that chapter, though. I mean, that's the chapter that the whole thing with Cad Swain is in.
Yeah.
I'm older than you by several decades, and I'm really the only male Aes Sedai who was properly raised and hasn't been turned to the shadow who still is living.
You should not.
So that's actually kind of interesting. You know, the only male Aes Sedai left who has been properly raised and not turned to the shadow.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an interesting way to put that, actually.
Well, really, when you think about it, he's the only Aes Sedai left who has been properly raised and not turned to the shadow.
He's the only Aes Sedai, male Aes Sedai.
He's the only Aes Sedai, unless you think that, you know, the original Hall of Servants ceremony similar to what the tower uses.
So what does it mean, properly raised?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
What's the phrase properly raised?
And what's
In other words, what he's doing at the Black Tower with the Dedicated and the Ashraman, and what the White Tower does is not proper?
Well, he does say, Aes Sedai. So I have to wonder if sometime between, you know, the start of the break. Well, no, that doesn't make sense either. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. See, the Aes Sedai raising that they do now may be nothing like what they did in the Age of Legends.
Yeah, and they definitely did not bind themselves, right?
Yeah.
They
lived in a utopian society where everyone behaved basically that way, and so they didn't have. But it wasn't until, in fact, it wasn't even until I think Arthur Hawkwing's reign with his rampant hatred of Aes Sedai, they were like, okay, we're going to do this so that you know that we're legit or whatever the proper phrasing would be in, you know, feudal society, you know, so we're going to bind ourselves like criminals. We cannot break these oaths, no matter what the Children of the Light say.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I thought you were done. Go on.
No, I am. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think when he says properly, he's speaking as Lou Theron Rand merged. So he's explaining how old he is, and he has all these centuries of honor and everything. And I think it's a matter of perspective, just like the White Tower as we know it right now, think that, you know, Nynaeve and Elaine, they're not properly raised because it wasn't done the way that the Aes Sedai are supposed to be raised in the White Tower. And Rand, at this point, his memories are largely, what, like 500 times more, or whatever. Sorry, I can't think right now. Are Lutheran's memories. So to him, properly raising is whatever they probably did back then.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it really means anything except that that's what he was in his, from his memories, that's what he's used to, and that was what was right. And he probably doesn't even know what the White Tower does to even raise somebody. So he doesn't.
There is no time that he would have learned that.
It's just, it's interesting phraseology, and especially coming into the meeting with the leaders of the Borderlands. You know, it presents an interesting picture of Rand as sort of, again, this. The past Rand would have boiled over, and would not have been in control of his emotions.
No.
Well, I'd have been pretty ticked off if somebody just hauled off and slapped me too. Yeah.
Well, it's also another very religious image, right? So this is the concept of turn the other cheek in some ways.
Mm.
Here we have this interaction, which, you know, Rand literally turns the other cheek in some, you know, in some capacity. But in exchange, you know, what we find out is that there's sort of a story behind that. And yet another prophecy comes to pass.
Yeah. Well.
So, you know, we leave. So in a sense, this is fated, right? The story here is that the whole part of this is fated. It's fated for him to have this epiphany, to have this meeting with the Borderlanders, and then to head in, to go back, Carrie, to what you were talking about with the dream, to head into a situation where what? I mean, that's the open question is, you know, are we going to head back to a space where Rand's going to have these mixed desires, and is that going to be the battle for his own internal soul moving forward? Where does that sort of fit? That's the RAFO, if you will. That's the read and find out.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating journey for his character throughout the book.
I don't really want to see another internal battle with him, though, because I feel like he's done. And
yeah, how many more battles does this poor guy have to do?
Fight the Dark One, seal him up, nice, break the seals, seal him back up.
Well, he still has to die and live again, too. You know, there's that hanging over him. I'm sure he's all fine with that now, being all zen-like, but
I don't know if he's necessarily going to die. I know that what's-her-name is supposed to help him die and all that, but I'm thinking that maybe I always thought that it meant going to help him to work so everybody thinks he's dead and he can go off and live his life privately or whatever.
I can never remember which one's for which, the first ones that gave him the answers to his questions said, how can you win the last battle? And he said, to die, you must die and live again. And then it's also prophesied that he will die on the, twice dawn today, once for death and once for mourning and once for birth. I don't know. I've forgotten it now. He's supposed to die.
Yeah, he's supposed to die, but I don't think he's really going to die.
Well, he might be brought back, but he's still going to have to die. You know, just like Matt did, really, I think, in a way.
I hope it doesn't just happen like that, because I just always thought that it's going to be some kind of play on words, like, or something.
The old Sting situation where the switcheroo is going to look like there's a body laying on the bier with the woman crying over him.
Yeah.
But he's not really going to be dead.
Something like that.
That's almost so cliche. I don't know. I mean, I kind of thought that, I really thought that for a long time, but now that we've gone the direction that we've gone with
He's going to come back.
The new Rand, yeah. I mean, he's totally setting up for coming back from the dead. That fits right in with all the other character personality traits he's coming up with now. Well,
anyway.
All right, I suppose we should probably wrap this up. Anybody have any final closing comments on the wide-ranging topic for tonight? Well, we stayed mostly on the topic of Rand.
Yeah, we did pretty good.
I mean, when you consider that Rand's story touches every other character in the book in some way or another, it's kind of hard to stay strictly on topic with him.
I am going to point out here at the 11th hour of the podcast, you know, we've been saying Zen Rand or New Rand or any other number of ways to differentiate between the Rand in this book and the previous Rand. And I think that RJ actually gave us the best ways to differentiate. You know, we have the wool-headed sheep herder and we have Rand Sedai, and those are the two Rands in the book.
That's definitely from the sublime to the ridiculous, huh? Or back the other way. I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
Well, I was actually going to refer to him as the Dragon Reborn Reborn.
Oh, there you go.
The Dragon Reborn Squared.
And then, of course,
I just came up with the perfect name for our musical spoof.
Ooh.
Wait for it. The Dragon Recycled.
it gives a whole different meaning to the green Aja.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Anyway, should we all say goodbye and just be done?
Yeah, I think that would be yeah. Okay. I don't even know where to start. We got so crazy there. I think that's going to wrap up this discussion of the new and improved Rand versus the old Rand, old scary Rand, and all of the ramifications of that. I think we've almost not even scratched the surface in a lot of ways. There's so much there, but that will definitely do it for this episode. We always welcome your comments. Input from our listeners, always desirable. Hopefully it'll be good. And if not, we'll take it. We'll be happy for it. So anyway, I want to thank Spencer, Carrie, and Daniel for joining me tonight. It's been a lot of fun. We have way too much fun doing this. We hope that you listeners do as well. And so for myself, Virginia, may the light illumine you until we meet again.
And from Daniel, may you travel from courage to strength.
And from Carrie, take care.
And until next time, may you find water and shade.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. To contact us, visit our website, DragonMount.com/podcast.
Oh, dude, that is too much. I'm going to unfriend you, like, tomorrow.
I guess we're
done. Marvin, you so stepped over the line. That's it for you.
No. Think of the Facebook update. Mirren went from in a relationship to it's complicated. Who's there and tell him on and Elaine? Yeah,
oh, oh no. Rand,
they could be in an open, they have open relationship too.
Open relationship
for there, right? That's what it should be. That's what Rand should be. It's an open relationship.
Rand definitely has to have it's complicated. There is nobody who has a more complicated set of interpersonal relationships than Randall Thor, Dragon Reborn.
Rand went from single to in a relationship. Interrelationships.
And who would Rand list as siblings? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't even know some of them. He still doesn't even know about, does he? Oh, my God. Yeah, he does.
He could find it all out on Facebook. That's the solution.
That's
we need to get the characters on Facebook.
That's
Randall Thor set as parent, Tarangel, not Tarangel, but Tigraine. Comment from Galad Damodred. Dude, WTF?
The white cloak, dude. That is so
90s.
Oh,
that is so last year. Oh, yeah, we're so 2008. You're so 2000 and late. Oh, my God, I'm losing my mind.